you have so much profit and things are going so good and you're growing faster than you ever have. But guess what? What if your competitors are growing faster than you? What if your market share is getting stolen? What if there is an alternative product or a disruption happening in the marketplace? And you might be aware of it, but you kind of have a tendency, and we do see this, to go, it's fine, it's not important yet, we'll worry about it later, because look at our P&L, look at our growth trajectory, it's raining money, and it can actually erode future resilience because of that short-term thinking and the busyness that is required in order to keep up with intense demand. And so just being aware and not planting seeds for tomorrow just because you're so busy harvesting is so, so critical. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Marketing Blender Show. I'm Dacia.
And I'm Daisy.
Now, we start getting pretty specific in the upcoming episodes, and I'm super excited because we're actually going to deep dive some really specific tactics and best practices for different industries and different niches. So today, we are diving into industrial products, services, and this has really been core to our company over the last 11 years. And so I think it's really, really fun because this is highly sales oriented. And so I think clarifying the role that marketing is supposed to play and how sales and marketing need to work together and what are some immediate things people can be thinking about is really exciting. And I love getting this specific.
It is. And one of the things that's interesting about industrial is they don't have low ticket sales.
No.
It's always high ticket. And that's one of the reasons they're so often sales led and thinking about when's the next big deal coming through and how, why they often put marketing to the side, because they think, you know, as long as we've got our salespeople out there driving the bus, then we're going to be okay. And we found that that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it's industrial, they're selling into transportation and mining and construction and manufacturing industries. And these are often long sales cycles, a lot of people involved in them. So there are a lot of ways that marketing can actually accelerate and solidify the sales process if you just look at it the right way.
Agreed. And you know, one other thing that's so interesting about many industrial environments is it's a lot of repeat business. So it might be project-based. And so then there's this interesting aspect of net new customers versus repeat customers, changing decision makers. And like you said, long sales processes. And then of course the ups and downs of what's happening to have wins at your back or, you know, really having to go through less than exciting boom times. And what do you do about that? What role does marketing play?
Yeah, it really is all industrial clients that we've worked with are impacted by the larger economic winds of change. If the customers that they serve are having a bad year or a bad decade, they can't escape from the impact.
Or politics?
Cool. Oh, goodness, yes.
Absolutely. So, and what I love about this and what I hope the audience is hearing is this is how to arrest more control and really we'll kick right off, build more resilience into their business model, into their business development, and even sometimes soften that yo-yo up and down of revenue cycles because you are taking more control over what's happening and not just being a victim, you know, good or bad, of what's happening to you. So where do you want to start?
I think I'd like to start with a discussion of brand itself and brand awareness, brand strength, brand visibility, brand reputation. Because if you're going through one of those down cycles and you know what, you may have your salespeople working as hard as they can and getting nowhere, or you may have your sales teams twiddling their thumbs because there's literally nothing to do. But there's always something to do on the marketing side. And building a brand that is strong, even in the most challenging times, is something you should definitely be investing in, because it's going to pay off when the money starts flowing again. Which brand are they going to remember? Which is the one that they're going to trust? Who are they going to turn to? You need to make sure you're focusing on brand building because it primes your buyers to choose you when the time comes.
Could not agree more. And I would argue when the funds are restricted, you are more likely to get chosen. And I think this is one of the most under-leveraged aspects. I think industrial companies have a tendency to lean too heavily on their portfolio, but then they don't show it, right? And it's a very tangible environment. I mean, they're building things. They're working with, you know, the physical environment typically, and to not understand and respect and leverage the fact that the eyes believe what we see, and that it builds trust, and it builds trust faster, and it's more memorable if you really own that visual aspect. Your reputation, which is what we're talking about in brand for industrial companies, needs to be visual, right? And so you're so right. It plants a seed for scaling and for really winning big in the future, but it helps you immediately, because when what represents you is wow, guess what they believe about what you deliver? So I love that we're starting there. And it's so disappointing because the humanity and the realism in industrial environments can be so stunningly beautiful. The photography can be so cool, and it can really resonate with core values and communicating, I get you, we're in this together, right? We're specialists. So I love the brand conversation here.
And going back to the fact that these are not small purchases, these are capital expenses, these are significant investments that their customers are making. Industrial companies have a significant impact on the companies that they serve and on the larger market that their customers are in turn impacting. There's no industrial company that's like, oh, we just make this little thing and it doesn't matter if people buy it or not. It's the gears of industry that are turning because of the things that they're doing. And that impact has significance and it needs to be recognized.
I love that. It's not only respecting the role and the ecosystem that you're in, but it's also honoring the importance of the work. And, you know, hopefully I'm not really jumping ahead, but I kind of am. This also builds into your employer and talent brand. I mean, there's absolutely critical, because when things are going well and you have to fight for talent, wow, making sure that you have an intentional employer or prospective talent experience speaks volumes and will attract the better talent, the better people out there, because they want to work for somebody that honors their work.
That's true. And we are definitely seeing more and more demand for talent branding, employer branding, marketing that has to do with building the talent pipeline just as much as the sales pipeline.
Yeah, I just wrapped one today in an industrial environment. So super timely to be talking about this and just the ahas and the practical application of this. So excited for them. I can't even stand it. So it's very exciting. So you had mentioned boom times, right? And I want to dive a little bit deeper into that, because a lot of times, for instance, infrastructure in Texas, as an example, you know, a number of our clients and a number of industries are really benefiting from these huge wins at their back, where there's just a lot of money going, a lot of projects going, a lot of opportunity around. So when you think about the boom times of industrial companies, for you, are there specific things in marketing that people should be really focusing on? Or maybe what are the blind spots that boom times can create for them?
If your industrial company is in a really flush season and things are easy, this is actually the time that you want to be very focused on building repeatables into your marketing, because this is the time you have all the money that you can invest in doing that. You want to have business development, marketing, and sales that are scalable and repeatable, and that you're not just taking the wins that come your way, but understanding why you're winning so that you can keep doing those things when times get tough again. So building something that you can grow and scale, and eventually sell if that's the direction your company is going. That's something you really want to be doubling down on and investing in when things are going well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so tempted to jump ahead, but I'm gonna use some restraint. The other thing that I find with boom times is that there is a potential for a boiled frog scenario. And so what I mean by that is, you have so much profit and things are going so good and you're growing faster than you ever have. But guess what? What if your competitors are growing faster than you? What if your market share is getting stolen? What if there is an alternative product or a disruption happening in the marketplace And you might be aware of it, but you kind of have a tendency, and we do see this, to go, it's fine, it's not important yet, we'll worry about it later, because look at our P&L, look at our growth trajectory, it's raining money, and it can actually erode future resilience because of that short-term thinking and the busyness that is required in order to keep up with intense demand. And so just being aware and not planting seeds for tomorrow just because you're so busy harvesting is so, so critical. By this point, you guys have figured out that both Daisy and I are chief marketing officers. But what you might not realize is there's a whole team of us at the Marketing Blender, and we also have outsourced marketing teams. So if you're curious about how we break revenue plateaus, how we untangle sticky messaging, and how we make sure to drive exciting return on investment and profitable growth, check us out at themarketingblender.com. But it's not just for mid-market companies. We've also figured out how to scale it down for small businesses too.
The Marketing Blender Lab is our program just for small businesses looking to hit their first million in revenue. You still get to work with a real chief marketing officer, and we use the same structures and systems that work to grow big businesses to help you meet and exceed your goals.
So again, if you're interested, check out themarketingblender.com. See you there.
I think if your competitors are doing just as well as you, there are going to be some of them that are investing in innovation. And that's a scary thought. If you think about how well your company is doing right now, and there's somebody out there who's taking the smart move and saying, okay, what can I carve out right now that will make it really difficult to compete with me next year? That's something you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Another thing about boom times is if you know that one is coming up, and it's always cyclical, there's always one that's going to be headed your way, having that foresight to build out rapid lead gen, rapid sales activation campaigns, the ones where if you can just switch it on, rapidly optimize it, it's going to get you the most leads into your pipeline the fastest so that you can start reinvesting that marketing money in ramping those up and not miss a drop of that profitability and revenue that could be coming your way in the best times. It's a really smart move.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And what I want to layer into that is that for marketing, there should be two clear goals. Well, several, but two for this conversation, this bullet point. Number one, obviously marketing needs to be filling the pipeline and driving revenue. However, number two, one of your goals in marketing should be to build a system. So that's the thing about a system is when you build something repeatable and forecastable, then you can build resilience into your company. There is repeatable features that are successful. You can get more squeeze out of the lemon. You can start optimizing systems, right? And you can shore up any risks or friction that's created. And then on top of that, when you have a system, you're ready to pivot or to adjust or to be more agile when things are in down times. So you should always be thinking system framework, because if you have a system, it does make your sales team more efficient because it unburdens them from all of the reinventing of the wheel in the constant manual application of this. And you don't have to keep figuring it out.
Another thing I'd like to touch on is the difference between brand reputation and brand visibility. This is a point that you were talking about before the show around people think their brand reputation is, oh, we have a good reputation. We have that word of mouth. But it's often an echo chamber. There's this sense that people have. We talk to our customers all the time. They know who we are. Great. And they're telling other people about us. Awesome. And what about the rest of your addressable market? Visibility is so critical, and it's something that you can't afford to ignore. And what is changing around reputation and visibility that you see in the B2B industrial space?
I'm so glad you asked this question. It was actually some research I only came across about 6 months ago. And honestly, I was surprised. Like, I was excited and validated, but worried for a lot of the market, because what it said is that for the first time in B2B, and especially in the industrial segment, brand is more important than reputation. And so for everybody that's saying, oh, this is a relationship business, or excuse me, brand is more important than relationship. Sorry, I think I said that wrong. And for everybody that says this is a relationship business, like, oh, my sales guy's been here for 20 years, he knows everybody. Okay, first of all, your buyers and decision makers are getting younger because they have to. Your successful customers, they are going to retire because they want to. So that reputation might be held only in the hearts and minds of people that will not be in the industry 5 and 10 years from now. And so recognizing that changing of the guard where it is not about relationship. And on top of that, you know, these younger generations are very familiar with brand. They're very comfortable building relationship with a brand, not a person. And having more ownership in their beliefs and what they believe about your company, what their perception is. And so understanding that actually reputation when embedded in relationship instead of in your brand authority and your market perception is absolutely critical to building that long-term viability and scalability.
It also makes me extremely nervous when somebody tells me their salesperson has been there for 20 years. Is that person going to be there forever? And right. If they're not, what happens to that relationship? I would also say that as people start churning through jobs faster and faster, there is a place for brand reputation. There is a place for a relationship, but those buyers are going to be taking that relationship with them to their next job and to their next job. So it's not the same as it was 20 years ago where Joe is going to be in that department for the next 15 years and he's got our back and he knows what's what and he's always going to choose us. It's making sure that your brand itself is strong enough that as your own team changes and as your buyers change, that brand is the focus of relationship.
That's right. You know, I like to joke, and you know, some of our viewers have probably heard me say this before, that B2B sometimes stands for belly to belly, right? Because you have to sell belly to belly, looking somebody in the eye. So we're not saying that relationship gets scrubbed out of the sales environment. It's that it shouldn't be your only card you're playing, but we see this really, really frequently.
We do.
Okay, so moving on. So this was the one that I'd wanted to jump ahead of earlier. It's because the system aspect of, you know, making sure that marketing becomes a repeatable system is so important. Sales enablement and technology enablement. I mean, come on, people. It's 2024. Your sales team needs to be using their CRM. You need to have really healthy policies and processes and policing. Ooh, the three Ps. Who knew that was coming? Of making sure that your CRM is capturing healthy data. Because if you don't have the data, you don't know where you're losing people, you don't have an optimization opportunity, and you can't automate what is not technology enabled. Because we mentioned boom times earlier, the number one thing you hear from salespeople, I'm so busy, I'm so busy, I'm so busy. They can barely keep up on the follow-up. That is not what you want to have happen when it's raining money. You want the biggest scoop possible to catch it all. But if your employees or your sales team has tiny little buckets, you know, and they're just trying to scoop it up one at a time versus having a system that casts, you know, catches the harvest, super important. And so, oh my gosh, the time to invest in technology was yesterday, but you can go ahead and start now.
You can. And it's so funny because we hear from industrial clients that they have such long sales cycles. It's hard to track everything. The fact that you have long sales cycles is why you must track, because you're not going to notice when things are changing if you don't have data.
Yeah. You know, we'll ask clients, what's your average length of a sales cycle? It is amazing how wrong they are usually, because it's a gut response, right? About 18 months or a year to 2 years or 6 months to 9 months. However, when you're harvesting data, it is surprising how often that is not true. And you don't know what you're losing or the opportunities that you could be capturing if you don't have a realistic idea of where you're losing people and what is the real landscape of your sales pipeline.
I think another thing that more industrial B2B companies should be doing is using data to understand their competitive landscape instead of just using what they are hearing around the water cooler or at conferences or trade shows, because, man, a digital audit will tell you all kinds of things about what you're really up against.
Okay, I love this one. I think some people would be surprised by that because they might go, well, where do I go? So you mentioned the digital audit. So give some examples of what we show or uncover or what we're digging for that is actually out there for companies to understand what environment they're really in.
So a few really good examples are, number one, organic SEO. Who's ranking for what? And a lot of industrial companies are very entrenched in specific markets. But honestly, most of them are ignoring a lot of opportunity in the SEO space. So don't assume just because you're a smaller player that there's no spot for you to own. And the research around who's ranking for what and where the keyword volume and difficulty is the right mix for you to rank gives you actually an edge. And it's always who starts first and does it best and does it most consistently. That's who wins in this space. Organic SEO is not the strict pay-to-play that Google Ads is. So you can, as a small company, really outpace your competitors around specific keyword clusters. So we're always looking at where's the opportunity. We also do look at who's spending on what keywords, because there we found sometimes there can be completely different industries that are bidding on similar keywords or even exactly the same keywords. So you might be up against an unrelated industry when it comes to catching eyeballs for some of your top keywords you'd like to be found for. So you really need to understand where to put your money in terms of getting seen online. Another thing we often do is social media audit. Now, fortunately, most of your competitors, if you're industrial B2B, are doing a sucky, sucky job on social media. But we can tell you that, and we can help you figure out, you know, of your six closest competitors, where do you rank in terms of your ability to get new followers for your social media content? What's your engagement looking like? Which of your competitors are doing things well that you can emulate with your own content? And where are they completely missing the boat? So you can swoop in and really own a space, even if you have competitors who are 10 to 100 times larger than you are.
Yeah. People tell on themselves. Companies tell on themselves online. If you want to know what their selling proposition really is, pay attention to the comments in their that are being made by their salespeople on social media as a good example, or if there is, when, very rarely, but to your point, but when someone is doing it well, ooh, just so much intel on what does that mean, and then comparing it to what do you know about the industry, what do you know about the position. You can also sometimes find up-and-comers, right? People that would otherwise have caught you off guard because maybe they just got recapitalized or there's big money or investment money behind them now and they're making a move. But if you've been one of the old guard that's always there, you're not necessarily worried about new competition when maybe you should be, and you'll see that in the digital marketing. So thinking about the digital landscape also brings me to targeting. So I get it, not a ton of industrial companies are doing great digital marketing, but let's pretend that they are, and they're doing targeted advertisements to reach buyers, influencers, decision makers, companies that they have not been able to sell to before. And so knowing your buyers and their actual demographic and psychographic information is critical to getting this right, because you might have this amazing ad campaign, but if you're wasting money getting in front of people that can't make a purchase decision in regards to your company, who cares?
This is something that I often see when industrial companies are selling into enterprises. I get asked the question all the time, can you help me figure out who in this organization buys my thing? Like, and this is companies that have been in business for 30 or 40 years, and they still haven't figured out how to determine in a large organization whose finger is on the button for them. Now, oftentimes I'll take them into Sales Navigator and we'll use some Boolean searches and some keyword targeting and classifications around roles and titles. And we'll actually find some pretty interesting data and some pretty solid resources for targeting by role, by title, and by how people describe what they do.
Yeah.
So understanding what those triggers are, we can often find some of that data. In terms of targeting, it depends on what you're trying to do. So with brand awareness, with industrial companies, it should be much broader, including who's in college now, who's going to be making a decision 5 years down the road, because they should already know your brand when that time comes. But when it comes to lead generation, that's when you have to get much more specific. So you've got your ability to target by search. What is something that this type of person needs to accomplish? And sometimes it can be something that you don't even provide But if you just know how to get your brand in front of them when they're looking for that thing because you know what kind of person they are. And we talked about this last year when we were discussing speaking sponsorships. Like if you want to sponsor a company to come in and talk about a topic that you know your target market needs to know about, even if it has nothing to do with your product or service, what a great way to get in front of a very targeted audience who now is exposed to your brand that you wouldn't have been able to get to just by doing Google Ads or by trying to go to a conference or trying to do this or that. That's about you trying to tell them the things that you care about your brand when they've got something else on their mind.
Yeah. And you know, I'm going to sneak this in a little bit sideways because it's not about targeting, but it's actually awareness of sometimes you need to identify who your snipers are. Right? And so that can be implemented in sales training. It can be implemented in your messaging and also not wasting time, right? Not going in through the wrong channels or recognizing when maybe the person that opened the door to you for the opportunity is only a sponsor. So they can say no to you, but they can't really say yes. And the highest and best use of their influence is the right introduction, right? But we see a lot of salespeople just churn on the wrong relationships and the wrong message because they're not going up. So I think it's really important when we think targeting for off-screen activities to understand what is the real influence landscape that you're selling into and don't take it for granted.
Yes, it is tempting to keep talking to a sponsor because they're still talking to you, right?
Yeah. Feels good.
Rather than acknowledging this is going nowhere and can go nowhere unless I provide this sponsor with the tools to sell up the chain. And that's where you should be looking when it comes to targeting your messaging. How can I help this person sell me internally on behalf of my brand?
Exactly. And so then that, of course, brings us to the last one, which is messaging. So messaging that supersedes a long sales cycle, messaging that is not about your product or your service, but is actually about the real reason the buyer is buying. So being courageous enough to speak into why you, and not just because of my list of benefits and product improvements. No. Like, what are their motivators? Why? What are they scared of? Why do you eliminate fear for them? Why would they sponsor you or why would they say yes to you? And really, we see industrial companies get differentiation so wrong here.
I think one of the areas where industrial B2B companies fail with differentiation is believing that they can say the same thing as someone else, and just because they're the one who's telling the truth, it matters to anyone. It really doesn't. If people aren't already doing business with your brand, they have no way to tell who's real and who's fake. So your differentiation really needs to be targeted around what matters to your buyers, what is the thing that's going to catch their attention because it's the thing that matters to them right now. How can you actually prove before the sale that you are who you say you are and that you can help them the way that you say that you can?
Absolutely. I think this was so fun. Any final thoughts? Because that really, for me, kind of rounds out some of the biggest opportunities and missed opportunities that we see in industrial marketing. Any final thoughts from you?
I would say that industrial companies need to recognize they're not going anywhere. Like, they're here to stay. They're embedded in our culture, in our economies. They make a huge difference for the companies that they serve. And they deserve to have marketing that's actually working for them. So it doesn't have to continue being a struggle.
I love it. Absolutely. Well, you guys, thank you so much for tuning in. If you have specific questions, reach out to either one of us on social media. Please, if you liked what you heard, hit that subscribe button and we will see you next week on Word and Upward.